Joining us for the first part of this week's episode is AJ from Steinbrenner Racing. We're going to talk just a little bit about the Rod Campbell Awards. So, AJ, first off, thanks for joining, and I'll let you take this wherever you want to start here, and we'll see where this takes us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. So the Rod Campbell Award is something that got me my start in racing. I'm a young guy, I'm 25 years old, and I was looking for a way in. I was in my first year of law school, and I knew that racing is where I wanted to end up. As someone that had no connections to anybody in the sport, that was something that proved to be pretty difficult. I was emailing teams just like they tell you to do, whether it was IndyCar, IMSA, even some folks in the Asian Le Mans series, because I was just like, at this point, hey, you know, why not? If this is the goal, you have to really go for it if that's what you really want to do. And luckily enough, I found this thing called the Rod Campbell Award when I was on racer.com one day and applied and heard back. Turned out I was lucky enough to win, and it led to this absolutely life-changing summer for me. That got me my start. Steinbrenner Racing's involved in the award. Thankfully, they liked me enough that they kept me around a little bit. So I've been there ever since. But it's something that there's been since it's in its fourth year this year. And so far, all three award winners have gone on to find full-time roles in racing. And it's really been something to launch our careers. And for me, it was when nobody else would give me a shot. So it's something that I will always appreciate.
So, A, I guess this is kind of a two-part question. A, what do you currently do for Steinbrenner? And B, the other award winners, kind of what roles have they either, come from or gone into? So people who might be listening and either want to apply or know somebody who, can apply, like, what types of positions should they be in or would they be in?
Sure. So, I mean, first off, the award is for anyone that's, age 18 to 23 that's just interested in a career in motorsports. It's on the commercial PR and business side, basically. So, if you're in the marketing, PR, sales, any interest in working in that side of sport. So, basically, if you don't want to be an engineer, you don't want to be a driver, you don't want to be a mechanic, this is for you. So, on my end, I was, just starting off in law school. My background was not business at all, but I know that, realistically, this is the direction that I was, going to go in. So now I'm the partnerships and activations coordinator for Steinbrenner while I finish up. This is my last year of law school, so it's a little bit of a transition year for me personally. While I still hope to be doing any commercial things, because it's honestly so much fun and also very rewarding to get to meet a lot of the individuals that choose to partner with the organization and, trust you with their business, and you get to be part, a small part of helping them grow. That's what we're doing right now, or what I'm doing right now with Steinbrenner. But with the first award winner, Cedric Burkhardt, so he went on to now he manages the Topcon positioning system sponsorship for James Rowe in Indy Next. So
Okay.
he's been managing that program now for 3 years, and they started with HMD and then moved over to Andretti. And every year, not only has it turned out to be profitable for Topcon, but it's actually grown every year, and their investment continues to grow in the sport because they do. The team of Cedric and James do incredibly well for that program, and they're now a leader in the industry with repaving racetracks, not just in the United States, but globally. So that program's gone, incredibly well for them. And our most recent winner, Madison Conner, she is just graduated from The Ohio State University. She went to school for journalism, and she's now found a position with RTD Media, which is one of the large companies. It's led by Mike Marini from, he also runs HMD Motorsports. For Henry, but so now she's over there working, just starting her career over there after going through her summer this past year.
So you mentioned that you were in law school when you applied for this position. For anyone listening who's interested, do you have to have necessarily the credentials like that a company be looking for? Is it more about like the passion and the willingness to learn? What would you say is kind of the balance there?
Absolutely the latter. It's all about the passion about the sport, the passion about wanting to learn, the willingness to learn, because that was a big thing about this award is it's to honor Rod Campbell's legacy. So Rod Campbell, for those of us that don't know, which quite frankly, I was one of those people before I applied and before I fortunately received the award, he was a huge figure in the marketing side of racing. He saw his first race while he was serving in the army. He saw a Formula One race over in Germany, came back, eventually started his own marketing company, which then was Really big with Ford and many other large companies that were in racing, IndyCar, NASCAR, IMSA, Formula One, you name it. So it's now, this is all of his proteges, because he was well known for starting people's careers in racing. It's all of his proteges coming together and doing this as a collective group. So it's, Jeff Swoboda with, he works a lot with BHA, but also, works with really a large collection of the people in the group. But also you have Sean Jones, who's a partner at BHA and Steinbrenner. Steve Venezia, who worked in digital collectibles and had his own company, of course, Townsend Bell, and so many other amazing people that are in this group and all had the same mentor. So that's what it's really about. Like, the credentials are something that, of course, is going to be on your application, but at the end of the day, that is not all the most important thing. We've had finalists from all sorts of fields that they're studying, doing all sorts of different things. Law school had exactly zero to do with this for me. It would just happen to be, my route to get into racing, because coming out of undergrad, I was like, well, poli sci, that's not really going to do it. Everybody needs a lawyer, so hey, let's play race cars that way, right? So yeah, just the passion and willingness to learn and being someone that they can look to as someone that might be a future leader of the industry that will really honor Rod's legacy is, what we're really looking for.
So I only have one more question, and it's more of a let you plug, but A, where do people apply, or B, where can, people get more information? Anything along those lines that will help potential applicants in the next couple weeks?
Absolutely, yeah. So the deadline is February 20th, and the best way that I can honestly tell people find it right now is if you look, just plug into Google Rod Campbell Award. The top list on Google will be from the racer.com article. They'll have all the information for the fourth year that we're running the award, who's involved, what we're looking at doing this year for the program a little bit, and at the bottom there'll be a link to the application. So yeah, that'd be the best way to go about it. And then also if you Google, look at the other ones, you'll be able to see things that Madison have written about her experience last year, things I've written about my experience. If you look at the people involved in the LinkedIn pages, they'll all have things about the award on there. So I know it's, looking around a little bit, but that's the best way to get a good idea also about, the people that are involved. You probably haven't heard of all of us. I
Sure.
certainly didn't. So, that'll get you a better idea too on who you're going to be spending your summer with.
Think the last thing that I'd ask just for anyone listening out there is, do you have any advice for people applying? Like anything that you might recommend as someone who won? What would you suggest, to somebody out there who's wants to be the next AJ?
Yeah. Oh goodness. Wanting to be the next AJ. That's something. Don't go to law school. I'm kidding. But no, I love my school. Absolutely do. Truly do. But yeah, it's really just the willingness to learn, the understanding that, we're young people, and the cool thing too about the people that are involved in the award, they know that young people have a lot of really great opinions, and that, we have a lot of really smart kids. But also just knowing, there's gonna be a lot of things that you do need to learn. Like I. On my end, I didn't know anything on the commercial side of racing. It's something that it's been a joy to learn, but you need to have that willingness to learn. But I think most importantly too is that, if racing is something that you really want to get into, like obviously I think it's really intimidating trying to get into this industry. It's not something that is necessarily easy. But if it's something that you really want to do, it's something that you really truly have to commit to trying to make happen. That's something like, so for people that might not be familiar with law school, for example, just because this is, my experience with it. Your first year, you're applying for internships for the following summer, the fall before and that winter. I did a thing that was not quite smart. Didn't apply for a single conventional law school internship because I was very determined to make the racing thing happen. So I'm not saying do that necessarily, but definitely, if it's something that you realize you want to do, putting yourself in a position really committing to going for it is the most important thing. So if you don't do that, you're probably not going to make it. But if you do, it can be really rewarding and set you up for something for the rest of your life that you're going to absolutely love doing.
I love it.
Awesome.
Well, sir, I appreciate you hopping on with us for a couple minutes here. I'll put the links in the show notes for everybody who wants to check out more. And yeah, where can people follow you? Are you on the social in the social world for people to follow along?
Oh goodness. Yeah, very, very small. I don't tweet a whole lot, but yeah, just search my name, AJ Bate. You'll find me on, the Instagrams, the Twitters, and I guess LinkedIn. Have to get better at that, when you're in a professional world. So you can definitely find me there, shoot me a message there. for sure. If you have any questions about the award or just generally getting in the racing, I always love to help people out in any way I can for sure. So
awesome,
yeah,
man.
thank you so much, guys. Appreciate
yeah,
you.
No problem. We appreciate your time.
Thank you. Thank you. Have a good one.
You too.
See you later, man.
Okay, back to the rest of the episode. We'll do some news. Frenchie, I saw the Gran Turismo movie this weekend. The one that came out like in the summer. It was okay. I was pleasantly surprised it wasn't awful. They mixed in like some of the video game like graphics and on-screen things kind of in the movie, which was cool. Yes, 70% of the on-track stuff was filmed at Hungaroring and not, you know, Le Mans or whatever they were saying, and it's really obvious at certain points to, you know, to those who know it. Like, girlfriend did not know what Hungaroring was, so I told her. But yeah, it was fine. It was fine because we watched it on Netflix and didn't pay. Like, I think if I had paid to see it in the movies, I would have been kind of bummed. But yeah, I think it was I think it was well done. It's definitely not like a bad way to spend my Friday evening or whenever I watched it.
Where does it rank in terms of racing movies? Because it's the story of Jan Martinborough, right?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, listen, I still haven't seen Ford versus Ferrari, and
oh wow, that's actually a really good one.
Yeah, I've seen like parts on TV. I haven't seen the whole thing. So I probably can't really. I mean, it's better than Driven. So I don't know how much that like really says, but it's better than Driven. And you know, the acting is good. It's not a bad movie. It's just fine.
Is it cheesy? Kind of?
A little.
That's what I kind of got from the trailer, and that's why I haven't seen it yet. But maybe I should watch it now that it's on Netflix.
Yeah.
All right, I'll check that out while we're kind of waiting for seasons to ramp up.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's touch on IndyCar news first, I guess, and then we'll get to discussing what our plan is moving forward with that other series that starts with an F.
Yeah, so I know this is like the last thing we mentioned before we hit record after talking to AJ, but let's start with the guaranteed entries because I think I'm going to make no friends in any opinion here. So I'll let you describe whatever you want to describe about the actual news, and then we'll take it from there.
Okay, so it came out a few days ago, I guess. Maybe it was at the beginning of the week, or was that last week that this
thing
came out?
I think it was Monday, yeah.
Okay, it feels like it's been longer than that because yeah. We're recording on Wednesday and I thought it was last week already. But all right then, I think you're right actually. It's just been a long 2 days for some reason. But what we're talking about here is the idea that Penske Entertainment, I guess, or the Penske Corporation could consider having guaranteed entries at the Indy 500. And that obviously is controversial because what a lot of people love about the 500 is the bumping and that the fastest 33 cars are the ones that make the field. We've had this before. I mean, under Tony George and the initial IRL, we had some guaranteed spots. What was it? What was the rule called?
25-8.
Yeah, 25-8. That's right. Okay. I knew it was 8 something. But so that was, what, 25 guaranteed spots for the starters in the IRL, and then essentially yeah. 8 cars that came from anywhere were eligible to try and make the field and qualify. You probably saw all these people on the internet who were not okay with this idea even being floated. I feel like it's floated every few years.
Yeah.
Though I would like to hear your take because I'm torn, honestly, about it. There's part of me that says, kind of gut reaction, no way. You can't do this to this event. It's historic. This would take away from the excitement of the event. It's really important that we leave that tradition untouched because a lot of the Indy 500 is tradition and that's what makes it super special. On the other side, there's a whole business that needs to be run here. And these full-time entries with sponsors need to know moving forward, right? That they're going to make the biggest race of the year, because there's still plenty of people who don't even know there's an IndyCar series surrounding the Indy 500 as an event.
Yeah, so my gut instinct Monday afternoon, which is when I think it came out, was, oh my God, no, that's terrible. Bumping is exciting, and bumping is exciting. It's pretty wild. It's, you know, but what, why are we stressing over bumping that's going to be one car, at the most two cars? We're not going to get 37 to 40 total entries. I mean, honestly, probably ever again. That's just not the way the world economy is going to work for racing. You know, in NASCAR, there is 40 total spots. I think the last four are kind of open for non-charter teams. We might have two or three that are bumped, but the NASCAR economy is significantly stronger than the IndyCar economy. And a lot of these teams, yeah, the guys who were fighting for to not be bumped last year were all, you know, full season, but the guys who are one-offs, do they make a big difference to the grand scheme of things in today's day and age in racing? No. Furthermore, IndyCar needs the money. These teams need the money. We need these teams to survive, to help the longevity of the series. Otherwise, we're going to see, you know, Carlin come in for a couple of years, disappear. Yunkos come in, disappear. Now they're back. And I'm sure, you know, a Foyt and or who else? A Dale Coyne or one of these other teams could end up, you know, losing a car or retracting just because, you know, monetarily, it just doesn't make sense right now. So we're spending a lot of money for not a whole lot of purpose other than, you know, some drama. And okay, last year the bump day was a bit exciting, but in the grand scheme of the season, who was excited by bump day? Is it your casual fan? Is it the fan you're trying to bring into the sport? Is it the kids you're trying to bring into the sport? Is it the women you're trying to bring into the sport? No. It's the people who have been diehard fans their entire lives. So it makes, we need to, this is hard because I do, you know, listen, I grew up with bump day being obviously more than it is now, but I think it's time to let this tradition go in some capacity. Maybe there's some way they can compromise. Like if you get bumped or if you're on, if you have to qualify on bump day, you still get some sort of guaranteed purse or something, but we need to find a way to help these teams financially as the series grows, as we add new hybrid stuff, as we maybe add a new chassis or a new engine or international races or non-points races at country clubs or whatever. You know, we have to do something.
I am pretty much convinced by that argument. I kind of see your point because while it is my initial visceral reaction to say, absolutely not, this would be terrible, this would alienate a lot of fans, when I sit down and really think about it rationally, and a few days after this news was not broken, because they're weighing it up, right? We don't even know if this is going to happen. This was just floated out there. The teams in the IndyCar and kart era, like the early IndyCar era, had sponsors that ran the whole season. I mean, we had Target cars, we had 7-Eleven, we had Snapple, we had all these kind of major household brands, right? I think what was Dario's other car, like Canadian Club whiskey that he had too, and like there were all these like major brands that we're pretty much on the car for the entire season. DHL, right? We still have that, but it's not the same landscape. There are all these little tiny deals that get done for around here, around there with sponsors. And so for a company to see value, I guess, in the race and promoting IndyCar and joining IndyCar, they need to have that return on investment. And I think that's becoming more and more important for these brands. And I think the reality is, if you want to see the sport continue and continue to grow and flourish, we probably need to deal with that, right? That's about the health of the series.
I just don't think bump day or bumping adds anything of positive value to either A, the business side of the season, or B, the season as a whole. Because at the end of the year, when Hello and Co. were fighting for the championship in the last month of the year, who was talking about bump day? Sure, we talk about the Indy 500 and Newgarden winning and Newgarden celebration. And yeah, kind of looking back on the season, you go, that was, a crazy bump day. But is it a storyline to the season? No, not at all.
Not for the brand, and it's not a positive
Sure.
storyline that they want to be associated with. So I think for the brands and the sponsors that want to sign up for the full season, they get a ton of value out of the Indy 500. I mean, that's a major part of why they're doing what they're doing, that one weekend, couple weeks, of coverage. So to have that guaranteed would probably make it a lot easier to sell that sponsorship to a company than to have the risk of, ooh, you know what? I don't know if I'm going to sign with Ray Hall because last year they didn't make, they were, one of their cars didn't make the field. So, yeah, it got a lot of attention and TV coverage, but it wasn't for the right reasons. So, you've got to look at it from both sides. And I think I totally get people's reaction of, wow, I can't imagine this changing. But I mean, like you said, we're getting hybrids introduced. The people of 30 years ago would never have expected that and
Oh,
could never predicted that.
they still don't expect
Well, what about the aero screen? All these things that
it. Yep.
I would say the old timers, the people who are really inflexible and unwilling to embrace any development or kind of newness in the sport's going to move on from them either way. So if you're a true fan, you will still love IndyCar and the Indy 500 regardless of what happens.
I have to say, I was talking about this with a podcast host from another show, and we were both laughing, like, oh, people are going to hate us today, when we record respectively. But I did not think you would one I didn't think you would agree with me to the level you did, and that's not like any judgment. I just like wasn't thinking about it, and I was like, oh, Frenchie will be mad.
No, I don't think there is, unfortunately, a valid argument for keeping bump day other than just an emotional one. And I
Sure.
feel that emotional one, but if you really step back and think about it logically and dispassionately, then you can see why this is being considered, I think, if you
Yeah.
really, take a step back.
I think that's a good way of putting it.
Okay. Other IndyCar news that we've got is that Sebastian Weldon
Yes.
is going to join USF Juniors. So as we tweeted, I think this is another chapter in the feel-good story that, feel-good story arc, redemption arc for the Weldon family that every IndyCar fan wants to see. We'll obviously be following him, and I'm excited for this because, he's got Gamebridge sponsorship, right? And the Andretti team kind of behind him. So if he's got the talent, which we think he does, he'll continue to make his way up. And this is only going to get more and more interesting.
And the Oliver Weldon, the younger Weldon, just like an hour ago got announced in the Skip Barber Racing Series. I
Oh,
think
I didn't even see that. Awesome.
also with Gainbridge support, I believe. I looked at that one as I was preparing for some job interview stuff, so I wasn't like totally focused on it, nor did I totally read it. Okay, what's next?
Kyle Larson tested an IndyCar at Phoenix the other day. I think I saw that he ran 172 laps. I think it was some night running too, but he's just
Yeah.
getting more and more comfortable, I guess, at ease and kind of natural with the running of an IndyCar on an oval. We don't know much about how competitive he was, but I would imagine that the more practice he has going into the Indy 500, the he probably doesn't need that much practice, right? He
I
races
know,
so
I
much
know.
and he just like is
He's good at
somebody who,
everything.
yeah, reminds me of a Tony Stewart or whoever that can just jump into a car and be competitive pretty much right off the bat. So practice for him is just almost an unfair advantage, but I love it that he's getting to do it
It did
and
make
it probably
me
bodes well.
miss Phoenix Night Racing. Not
Agreed.
that the track is great, but I was just like, oh man, that would be ideal if IndyCar was there or Richmond. Yeah, you know, that's where my mind was going the other night. But yeah, practice Kyle Larson getting practice time is an unfair advantage in any racing series because he's Kyle Larson.
Yeah. So pretty cool to see. I think he's just learning and he's so talented, like you said, that him being able to learn and get accustomed to things will make it so much easier for him, even though he already makes it look easy.
Yeah, exactly.
Last piece of IndyCar news. I guess we're going to see the return of 100 Days to Indy on the CW, as well as Paramount Plus.
Yeah, season one from last year is on Paramount Plus or will be on Paramount Plus. Season two, not yet.
Okay, but it'll air on the CW and then probably make its way to Paramount Plus, I would
That would be
think.
my bet, yeah.
Yeah. So are you excited about this? Is I know neither of us really tuned in very much for the first season. Do you plan on changing that for this second one?
The only reason why it might change is because I would like for it to be a way to get my girlfriend kind of understanding who I have been interviewing and covering for the last 7 years. Am I going out of my way to watch? No, not really. Not much is truly going to change, but we'll see. I'm more open to it than I was last year because I didn't really care either way, but it's good that it's continuing.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, do you think this is a good sign just for the health of the series in general and the
For
interest
sure.
that this series got? Because I don't think the CW would do it if it didn't offer some kind of a return for them.
Agreed. It's if they're renewing it, it's not a bad thing. I don't know how a renewal process works for a reality show, but in no way, shape, or form is it bad. So, I'm excited to see, people who watched all of last season. I want to see kind of what they think versus season one, if it's better or worse or different, I that's what I'm most curious about.
My last question for you on this before we move on to other topics is, are we going to see the IndyCar community being like, ew, gross, that's a 100 Days to Indy fan person that just got into the series really recently and we don't like them?
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Hey there, and welcome to the Joy of Paddle podcast, hosted by me, Minter Dial, a veteran of the paddle tennis world, and sponsored by Paddle 1969. Whether you're a paddle tennis aficionado, just beginning, or have never even heard of paddle, or padel, as it's called in North America, this is an exhilarating new show that delves into the captivating stories of notable paddle personalities worldwide. In its inaugural season, you'll be treated to exclusive anecdotes, valuable tips, life lessons, and humorous moments shared by esteemed professional paddle players, industry insiders, and passionate paddle enthusiasts. With each season aligning with the Pro Tour, you can anticipate 2 engaging episodes per month. The Joy of Paddle podcast is part of the Evergreen Podcast Network, where you can find other great shows in a number of categories, such as sports, health and wellness, true crime, and fiction. To find out more about Evergreen Podcasts, go to www.evergreenpodcast.com. Vamos!
How do I put this without sounding harsh? No, I don't think we're going to see that. There's a lot of reasons, but I probably can't say them without getting in trouble. So I don't think so, because I don't think,
it was a loaded question.
It was a loaded question, and I'm trying to be very political about this because I don't want to upset those who, yeah, let's go on to the next one.
Okay, so that question leads me perfectly into our next topic, which is Formula One. And I say that with a weird voice because we put out a poll after the inevitable Andretti rejection occurred. I will repeat, inevitable. It was telegraphed that that was going to happen. I know people were hopeful because Michael and Mario and others within that organization, and I guess Mohammed Ben Salem, who appears to live in his own universe, but we'll get to that in a little bit, were convinced that they could somehow change the mind of Stefano Domenicali and F1 management and the teams. People were not happy with that. I mean, it's a bad look for F1. Don't get me wrong. It's a pretty terrible look because you opened the door. And then, well, we can get to the criteria, I guess, and discuss those. But
yeah,
you open the door, you invite teams, okay? You only approve one of them to move on in the process. Then you reject them anyway with very little grounds. I mean, to be honest, this is exactly the storyline that I feel like we all could have seen coming. So the anger, I do and I don't understand. But where it's relevant to us is that we put out a poll saying, well, if you guys all feel like you're going to boycott F1, like we were seeing all over social media, yeah, you really don't like the direction that the series is going, which I can understand. I think,
sure,
obviously, host Mike feels that way. And we know that from the way he sort of not treated, but
don't care.
Yeah, just completely detached himself from F1 last season. We asked our listeners on Twitter, which I know not everyone that listens to this show has Twitter or participated in this poll, because a lot more of you saw it than actually put an answer. But 72% of people said they no longer want to hear F1 content on this show.
Ooh.
We have to decide what to do with that, because I know you're checked out on F1. And so it mostly falls on my shoulders to even keep abreast of these things and bother bringing them up on the show. And so I know there are people out there who probably still want to hear about it somewhat. And I think what we'll end up doing is maybe a lot less race to race Grand Prix coverage.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll mention a few big news things as they happen and if they happen. But if we see a repeat of the 2023 season and Max Verstappen dominating, we're probably going to tone it down a bit if it doesn't make any sense for the majority of those listening to our show, if that's not content that they're seeking out.
Yeah, I think that sounds great. Quickly on the Andretti thing, you and I have talked about it a ton. It's been talked about a ton. I'm only going to say one thing. Do you really think that email got lost in the Andretti spam folder? And this is a question I'm just going to leave out there, and then we're going to move on. I don't even need your answer.
Well, I was going to read the criteria just really quick for anyone who maybe hasn't seen it yet.
Yeah, go ahead.
So we can pick those apart. The full statement that F1 released for why they rejected the Andretti entry. Basically, they said they considered the likely competitiveness of the applicant's entry and its impact on value. I don't think we need to equate competitiveness with value, Because if you do, then pretty much eight or nine of your teams in F1 currently don't have any value and don't contribute to the sport. And Red Bull's carrying the series on their back,
Red
maybe
Bull
with
won
Mercedes and Ferrari.
21 of 22 races, or 22 of 23 races, whatever it ended up being. So please don't talk to me about competitiveness.
Exactly. We also have the arrangements with respect to the supply of power units and the arrangements that those would have on the applicant's competitive performance. I'm sorry, there are plenty of customer teams on the F1 grid. So this is
Sure.
absolutely bogus. We also saw something about key stakeholders to understand their view of the value that the applicant would bring. Well, F1, if you're like going all in on the United States, you have three Grand Prix here. I think you, and Liberty is an American company. So you would think that they might understand that the Andretti name is racing to most people in the United
Sure,
States. Like
sure.
when you are asked to name a race car driver, maybe it's not Michael, but it's Mario. And he's involved with his team. I mean, it's him or Dale Earnhardt that
Yeah.
everyone knows,
Yeah.
right? That's what I would think. So that's a big miss. I don't know what more you need to bring in terms of value and just eyes on the sport. But the last thing is the operational impact of existing circuits of adding the 11th team. If you were concerned about that F1, you should never have opened this up in the first place. And I understand that Mohammed bin Salam was the one that did it. And so I think a lot of this falls at his feet. I think he gave Andretti probably false expectations and, you know, overstated his power that he could make this happen for them or somehow convince the other parties, like, I'm a great negotiator. I can
Yeah.
figure a way to
Yeah.
get you into the series. And they invested so much money, so much time. I mean, this is like egg on the face of Cadillac, GM, Andretti. Like, it's not a good thing. And I, who knows what's going to happen, but to be angry at F1 and Stefano Domenicali and the teams, I understand. But I also think, and everyone knows my feelings about him, that MBS, Mr. BS, deserves a lot of the blame here. And I'll leave it at that because I'll say that's allegedly, I'm just making speculation.
Yeah.
But I would imagine that there's some stuff that happened that he probably could have done better and could have prevented this from going as badly as it did. But like I said earlier, he lives in his own universe, it appears.
Yeah, man. I think that's pretty accurate all around.
Okay.
And to share my level of F1 disinterest. As soon as we started talking about the word F1, I started pulling up a game on my phone and forgetting that we were actually recording right now. So, you know.
Well, that's going to inspire everyone to listen, but I have a few more pieces of news that I feel like we have to cover really quick.
Yes, let's get to it. I am focused and ready to go as I browse Twitter.
So we found out that Christian Horner has been accused of inappropriate behavior. I've seen and heard from individuals that would likely know that this may have involved sending inappropriate pictures to an employee within Red Bull. We have to figure out if this actually happened, but I guess the parent company of Red Bull, GmbH in Austria, right, is working on this. This is not a good look for them as a business, and they are investigating this. Apparently, we are going to have some kind of a hearing set for
It's
Christian
Friday,
on
right?
Friday. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess maybe as this is coming out, we'll find out something, or maybe we'll hear about it before Red Bull's launch next week. That's what they want to do, is take care of everything. But the big piece of news I think that matters here is we've heard that Christian Horner and Adrian Newey may have contracts that are tied to each other in a way that if one leaves the organization or exits somehow, the other would have the ability to do so. And so everybody's speculating, oh, Adrian's going to Ferrari, blah, blah, blah. Who knows what's going to happen there? But that's just food for thought. I don't know if we need to speculate on that. I think there's been enough of that on social media.
Yeah, I think we can just leave it there. That's fine.
Okay. Lewis Hamilton going to Ferrari. He dropped a bombshell the day after the Andretti news. I don't think Lewis was necessarily instructed to do so, or that there was a conspiracy there. But that was very convenient that some interesting news that was positive for F1 and would excite people was dropped just the day after a major piece of news pissed off a large group of fans. That's rather convenient.
It's far, far too convenient. That being said, it is kind of cool. You know, as a one-time big Ferrari fan when Michael Schumacher was still in the sport, it's somewhat exciting. I also that was that was the morning, like I woke up at like 3 a.m. and never fell back asleep. So I was just scrolling through Twitter and whatnot. If you look at like the screen time app on your phone, like my screen time that day was like 16 hours because I
Oh my
just laid there.
gosh.
And so like I saw the Hamilton stuff happening like in real time, where it was like a rumor, and then like a couple hours later it was like fully announced. So it was kind of interesting, but also far, far too much of a coincidence to not. There was, yes, you're right.
The last thing I guess I'll say on this is that he's starting with Ferrari in 2025. So he's got this whole 2024 season still left with Mercedes. Clearly, there was some kind of an option on his side where I believe he was under contract with Mercedes, but possibly he could take that option up or not. And so from 2025 on, it's been said that it's a multi-year contract. It's going to be interesting to see a Charles Leclerc and Lewis Hamilton dynamic. Maybe back in 2025, we will be able to pick up our more in-depth F1 coverage again, just because this will maybe pull people back in. Who knows? But it's also led to speculation about who's going to take that Mercedes seat. I'm not going to necessarily get into that now, but I'm just going to say that I think there's a lot of speculation over that, which makes me happy because people doubt George Russell, doubt that he can lead that team.
Yeah, I knew that's where you were going with that one. That's why I sat here patiently just waiting for you to
Oh, it's predictable.
to bring it up.
Him and Mohammed bin Salem, you know I'm gonna not miss a chance to trip them up if I can, or like take a barb at them. Last thing on F1, is there are two more high profile figures leaving the
Oh
FIA.
God. Who
More egg
now?
on Mohammed bin Salem's face. So it's two individuals who we've probably never heard of.
Okay.
They're kind of, I would call them behind the scenes figures,
Yeah.
but they're individuals who were involved with the Concorde Agreement. So their names are Pierre Ketterer and Edward Floyd. Floyd has two D's, interestingly. But Ketterer is going to take up a new role at the International Olympic Committee. He had been with the FIA since 2010. He, I guess, was essentially the leader of the negotiations for the current Concorde Agreement, and he created the FIA disciplinary rules in 2011. So he's leaving. And then the other individual leaving, Mr. Floyd,
Mr. Floyd with
I
two D's.
guess, correct. He will be going to, I don't know what he actually, it says what he's going to be doing, but he was the civil and commercial legal advisor to the FIA, and he was the lead negotiator for championship promoter agreements and Concorde discussions. So these are two people who, I mean, had been in for a while, had played major roles in the FIA. And I take this as more damning evidence of Mohammed bin Salem's incompetence and poor leadership, allegedly.
Yeah, it's hard to disagree with you, you know,
Oh,
going off of nothing, but you know, it's definitely hard to disagree with what you said. So, yeah.
after
All right.
so many people leave, I think that's a sign, right? I mean, it's hard to argue. We saw there's the pattern developing here. So maybe we'll watch this with glee. As F1 continues to go down this path, we're not even going to touch on what they're going to do with sprint races next season because we don't care.
Nope.
And I think that's pretty much it for our open wheel show
That's it,
today,
guys.
not
That's
forever.
it. That's it for this week. Thanks, AJ, for joining us at the beginning. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back next week to ramble on about other stuff. Who knows where it will go? Until then, toodaloo.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.